My name is Kevin O'Malley. I am president of Tech Talk Studio in San Francisco. I'm very excited to be here today to moderate this program on the future of innovation in consumer electronics. Very excited to have our two speakers here today. Just tell you a little, probably this man needs no introduction, but just in case you don't know, this is Gary Shapiro, and Gary is the head of CEA, the Consumer Electronics Association. And CEA is an organization that represents over 2,000 technology companies and produces the International CES Conference in Las Vegas in January, which is only just slightly bigger than South by Southwest this year. Gary's also the author of... he's an author quite often in Forbes and the Huffington Post, and his book is called The Comeback, and the book is for sale outside. Our other panelist today is Richard Watson. I'll tell you a little bit about him as well. Richard is our design expert today on this panel. Richard is a kind of a design ambassador to the world of consumer electronics. Richard's the founding partner of the research, strategy, and development consulting firm Essential. Richard helps business leaders create innovative products and services in consumer, healthcare, and commercial markets, and brings them together with his team of researchers, skilled translators, industrial designers, and engineers. His clients include Dell, Pyrex, iRobot, Procter & Gamble, Eltec Lansing, EMC, and Puma. So, Gary, I wanted to start with you. I'm really excited. This is your first time at South By, isn't it?
Yes.
What do you think?
This is great. You know, first of all, it's great to go to someone else's event, because it's much more fun and relaxing. But second, this is a cultural phenomenon. And I think what you're seeing here is the fact that people like to gather. They like to see new things. They like to see what the trends are. And this event has evolved over time, and it clearly has its own personality. And I think it's terrific. I'm just so frustrated because I want to do like 1,000 different things here, and I don't know how to do that. But I learned that there is a session for people like me.
Right, but you're not missing anything by being at this session.
Okay.
they're getting everything they ever wanted to hear from you today. So that's all we ask of you, okay? And I know you're used to talking to a more of a business audience, a little bit crazier here, so I'm expecting you'll let your hair down. I know you took off your tie this morning, and so we're going to go from there. So, Richard, can you just tell us a little bit about your background in consumer electronics and what your take on the comparison between South By, and you're a regular at CES. This is your first time at South By.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this whole interactive last few days are really, I'm here because it's just kind of the central point, I think, of what's happening from a design perspective and also from an innovation perspective, I think. Everything that's going on here, everything that people are actually inventing and creating, I think is going to have a major role in actually shaping a lot of what is already starting to happen at CES, but I think also into the future as well. So it's kind of just a really sort of exciting kind of smorgasbord of just cool stuff.
So, Gary, for people who are here that don't know really about the Consumer Electronics Association, can you tell them a little bit about who you guys are and how you work, and maybe tell us about the big announcement you guys made this morning?
Sure. We're a national trade association. We represent over 2,000 American companies that are involved with consumer electronics. The manufacturers, the software providers, the internet companies, and the retailers. And these are people that are passionate about innovation and about, frankly, the American dream. I know some of this audience is international, but the reality is we're very focused on the United States and making sure that we have an environment in the United States which encourages innovation. We do own and produce the International Consumer Electronics Show, which is held each January in Las Vegas. Show of hands, how many of you have been to the CES in Las Vegas? Oh, a good number of you. Thank you so much. That's great. So that show has been around since 1967. It started in New York. I'm fortunate enough to have been running it for 20 years now. But the purpose of that show really is to link up those focused on innovation with people from around the world who are interested. So we have 150,000-plus people coming to Las Vegas, including 35,000 people from outside the United States, 6,000 press. But the purpose of the show, and our staff knows this so well, because 30 years ago, the first board meeting I went to, it was a discussion, and the head of the board was a very large multinational company. And the talk was, should we make it more expensive for people to exhibit? Should we raise this square footage rate by a dollar, actually, was the cost. And he said, not a big deal. We could afford it. We're the largest company exhibiting. But we have to make this show accessible. So any American, anyone even, with an idea can go to this event And for a couple of $1,000s, they can be exposed to investors, partners, buyers, retailers, media. And that is the philosophy of the show. 80% of the companies there are small business. And what we try to do is make sure that anyone with an idea can get it exposed to any, and we can start to do business. And it's been successful. As an outgrowth of that, we partnered up with Startup America, which is a great initiative. It's pretty much volunteer that's focused on innovators in the United States. And also a couple of other partners, including the National Science Foundation, I just spoke before their top executives last week in Washington, and they give $7 billion a year to American universities for basic research. Ironically, if anyone wants to read in Forbes Wednesday, I'll be talking about that and how we give it. Most of the work's done by foreign graduate students, and then we kick them out of the country so they could start competing with us. It's not a very logical way of approaching life, but that's what we're doing as a country. But anyway, that area of the show, we had a goal of 30 companies, and we called it Eureka Park. And wow, it took off. We had over 100 companies, and today we announced we're expanding it dramatically. We're having some contests, so people will come there and exhibit. And you have to be it's a very low threshold to be an entrepreneur. You have to really be a startup, and we help subsidize that. And basically, everyone who exhibited there was thrilled. They were really exposed, and they got to see. They got a lot of advice. They got a lot of potential investors and partners and buyers. And that's what these events are for, in part. I mean, what I was on the trade show floor here, I found it tremendously exciting. You know, it's weird. Those of us in the technology world are always focused on the internet and how you could have virtual reality, and basically you don't have to ever go and talk to anyone and see them physically in the flesh. On the other hand, those of us that are also involved in events, there might be a discrepancy there, but I am so passionate about the fact that you can come to events like this one, like the show floor, and you could stumble upon something or see people, and you could trust them, and you could use your five senses, and you could judge whether that person is trustworthy, whether they have a good idea, whether you want to do business with them, whether you want to pursue them. So although we're like going rocket speed into the future of technology in so many different ways, these live interactive events, I think, are so critical. And until you can invent a honeymoon that's virtual, we're going to have events like these which are not virtual.
Okay, well, one of the topics that today's panel is a lot about design, consumer electronics. One of the big themes that we've been talking about before today is interconnectedness, and that is happening more and more. Richard, you were just at CES, and you're a designer. What do you see happening right now?
Well, I think one of the big sort of changes I think that's occurring kind of naturally, but at a very fast pace, is that I think, traditionally, whenever I'd go to CES, it was really all about the big sort of physical blockbuster device, or a couple of years ago it was who could create the biggest flat screen TV. But I think it's really obvious right now that what's really going on is everything that's within those devices too. So I mean, even though OLED TVs are super cool and super thin, it's really the exciting innovation that's happening on the content management inside those devices. It's the content that is on a mobile device. It's really, any screen anywhere. And I think this is where, the combination of this event and what's going on at CES is really exciting, because I think a lot of things that are being created here are going to be showing up as content through traditional sort of CE products. So I think that was kind of one component that I think was extremely interesting this year, in the sense you had to really sort of dig deep to get at the really excitement. And although there's the sort of flashy, sort of shiny objects that you sort of always see at CES, it really has sort of transitioned now to being really about the content on individual devices, but also I think the excitement of how there's this level of interconnectedness between the devices themselves. And I think one of the most exciting areas for me that I saw is sort of these three sort of spaces which move beyond traditional CE into the emerging areas of connected health, I think connected home, and I think the other area is kind of mobility, not in the sense of mobile from a smartphone perspective, but I think mobile in terms of what's happening in the automotive space as well, and this kind of incredible interconnectedness that's occurring between those.
So Gary, from your point of view of knowing all the heads of industry and being all over the world, what's the hottest, coolest thing happening right now? And so I'm sure this is the question you get asked every day, probably about 300 times a year, but tell us, what's the hottest, coolest thing?
Well, it's like asking a parent which are their children is the best, I would never answer that question. But I will say that I think Richard had it right. What you are seeing in so many different areas is phenomenal. We're at the infancy, and there's tremendous growth ahead of us. And there's actually, although it's unpredictable, there are logical endpoints. For example, in the automobile, it's clear, you know, it was hot. 6 of the 10 largest car companies were at CES, and they're there. And they're focusing on cars as technology vehicles rather than, they're not talking about horsepower the way they used to. They're talking about technological capability, about Wi-Fi access in the car, about internet always being there, about soon we're seeing collision avoidance. We're seeing safety systems which focus on your eyes and whether they're moving away from looking at the road and looking down at something else or falling asleep. So you're seeing, and where we're heading, and to stick with the automobile, is clearly to the driverless car. I mean, Google has already proven it. The driverless car raises so many great, fun issues in the next 10 or 15 years about, you know, access for the disability community, access maybe for kids, access for the inebriated. There are all sorts of moral issues which will come up. And just the number of collisions will go down, and how that'll affect our health is important. You mentioned healthcare. Healthcare is clear. I mean, you know, the numbers in our country are so obvious that we have to do something. And technology is already actually, you could put all the ingredients together. You could do home healthcare monitoring. You could do it with diabetics, which is a scourge that's affecting our country. You could do so many different things. There are issues that come up there. How do you pay the doctors? Who's paying attention to that information? How do you do it? You know, what happens if your internet goes down? There's big issues there. Then there's the whole just wireless connectivity you talked about. You talked about video. I think video is a little bit more exciting than you. I mean, there's something called 4K in television. You know, 4K is the next step. It's quadruple the field of high-definition television, which I think is the best thing since sliced bread. With 4K, you have this great, phenomenal screen that you don't even really, in a sense, need the glasses of 3D. It'll look like 3D, and you'll have tremendous information, but it won't be broadband accessible, at least in the beginning, for most broadband. So it may become a packaged media, which raises all sorts of opportunities for companies. Again, I mean, Hollywood loves packaged media. And then there are developments for accessibility for disabled people, which is absolutely huge, and we're focusing that area with our foundation. Because these devices that are coming on and on allow a disabled person to have some of the same benefits as an abled person. And then there's things, of course, we can't predict. Like there's this thing called 3D printing, which I think is just so cool. And you could do prototyping of 3D. I saw it demonstrated here as well. It's phenomenal that you could like basically say, I want this design produced, and it'll come out. And that's going to be very commonplace soon as well.
I think that's an interesting transition. I think at CES was this cool little display by this company called MakerBot, and they were just sort of cranking out cool little 3D products and devices. But I think it really is this interesting kind of transition in manufacturing ultimately.
Can I ask a question? How quickly does that accelerate the time to market for anybody with an idea?
Well, I think at this point in time it's primarily used in the sort of prototype kind of process, but it is kind of beginning to transition into real products. So down the road, obviously, I mean, it's going to help in a way at a highest level potentially bring manufacturing more local again. And I think it's starting off kind of more in sort of DIY mode. So it's starting off with simple devices, simple products. But I think as it becomes more robust, I think ultimately it will transition into sort of a full-blown manufacturing technique. And again, it has been used for quite some time now in sort of serious, robust prototyping, but we are now beginning to sort of see those that kind of rapid printing techniques being used to actually create products on the fly. So I think it's a great way of closing down networks. I think, again, it kind of changes on its end in a little bit traditional ways in which you view manufacturing. I think it addresses some of the commoditization that's taken place currently in some of the traditional CE spaces, in the sense of, you know, manufacturing being forced offshore. So I think that'll be one of the components down the road that will drive, you know, manufacturing back. And ultimately, to answer your first question, I guess, it will ultimately help in shorten the process, I think, inevitably as well.
Gary, what was your next question?
My next question? Well, I keep thinking about the 3D thing because, you know, it started out with Etch-a-Sketch, then we went to CAD design, and those are all still two-dimensional.
So Etch-a-Sketch is still pretty cool. Sometimes you need those analog tools just to kind of keep it real, you know?
No, but just think about every kid could have a, you know, a prototyping machine at their home. I mean, that is a phenomenal concept for innovation.
Well, I think so. I mean, just going off that, I think it also drives, those techniques will actually, I think, help in the sort of, in the education process. It allows the invention process to be again, closer to home, so I can see those prototyping techniques actually helping inform, you know, budding engineers and budding designers in the future as well. I want to sort of jump back to the sort of the connected health solution, because in the sense of making those connections even between the automobile and the connected health area, we were doing some work with a company called WellDoc, who basically been developing a diabetes management platform, which in itself is really interesting, you know, because, you know, they're delivering a solution that will actually, you know, be delivered through a mobile platform that helps, you know, basically create advice to patients, creates a community for patients. But interestingly, what I saw when I was at CES, that WellDoc platform now is kind of part of Ford's first sort of interactive sort of portfolio of applications. So even driving healthcare solutions and connecting them across into the automotive space is probably also something I think you'll see happening as well. So tracking your health in the home, on the go, and anywhere.
Can I stay with health for a second?
Sure.
So one of the coolest things that happened to CES wasn't a product that was announced, it was a challenge that was announced. So the CEO of Qualcomm spoke, and he brought on stage a related foundation, and they announced an X Prize. And the X Prize will be given to someone who comes up with a tricorder. Now, a tricorder, for those who didn't watch Star Trek growing up, is a device that you just put over someone's body, and it not only provides diagnosis, but it also heals. So this isn't really necessarily for us in America, where we have access to healthcare, but it's really for the rest of the world, especially the developing countries, where you can provide healthcare solutions in a way which does a lot, not for everyone, obviously, but some of the simple stuff that could really work. And I think that type of thing is like a leapfrog type of technology, which will be here. I mean, the components are there, systematic, putting together in a smart way that works.
Hey, so this is a question for both you guys, and this is comes out of the idea of design and a larger understanding of design that is more than just making something look pretty. How much of a role do you think that design consultants, trade organizations, how much do you play in influencing the face of how things are happening, and how much do you just respond to what's happening that people want in the marketplace?
Is that question more about, you know, the kind of the general role of design?
Well, yeah, let's start there, and then let's go to maybe more.
Well, basically, the role of design has already transformed itself. I think one of the things that, if you go back to the traditional consumer electronics space, design was really only about sort of shaping the form of products. And I think whether you're in the sort of interactive space or whether you're in the sort of physical product space, you will agree now that I think design is much more at the center of shaping strategy itself. It's a way of thinking that now has been adopted to sort of help drive strategy. And there's nothing against it, because I think design is still going to play a very important role in creating that emotional connection through creating beautiful physical products, creating beautiful interfaces, creating beautiful graphics. But I think... you know, design is really much more today about, you know, number one, connecting with the users. It's about connecting with business goals, and it's about connecting with technology in an appropriate way that makes the right connection and the right result and the right benefit and value ultimately for people at the end of the day.
And Gary, from your point of view, what kind of role does the CEA play in developing ideas or responding to them?
A number, actually, and I want to use an example we're not involved in, which is automobiles. So basically, most automobiles do the same thing. You know, they take you a place and they go relatively the same speed. I mean, it's not that the difference isn't that great, but the prices difference are huge. What makes a difference is the design. The design makes different automobiles more appealing. They become aspirational. They become visible manifestations of wealth, let's be honest. That's what a lot of what's going on. That's what a lot of the advertising is based on. In what we do really well at our organization is a tremendous amount of research. We're asking consumers what they want all the time. Different features, different products. So like 6 or 7 years ago, I think it is, we came out and we said, you know what? There's this great smartphone market which is evolving quickly. It's a small screen. There's this great TV market which is a big screen. There is a huge gap in the middle screen market that's just waiting to be filled by someone. You know, people forget, Microsoft did jump in first. They really didn't have a lot in a product that didn't work. But then Apple obviously jumped in big time with the iPad, and it's one of the most successful products in history. Did Apple rely upon our research? Honestly, I have no idea. They're a member of ours. I'm sure they use it somehow. But there are other areas and other features. If you walk around the trade show floor, or if you listen to the entrepreneurs next door at the Hilton pitching, which they've been doing, and I was over there earlier today, everyone is basically trying to solve a problem. That's what makes any effective. You may create the problem, then solve it. But that's what an entrepreneur does. And a lot of that is design. If you look at Apple again, what is Apple so great at? You know, let's be honest, the MP3 player or even some of Apple's computers, they weren't fundamentally different in terms of breakthrough using technology. They were just design products, and they were also aspirational products. Those white things on your ears became something that people wanted because it was outward and you could wear it and you could show people. And ironically, they've been replaced, and I think this happened in Europe first, with these big headphones. Based on my own market research, counting people walking by in various cities around the world, that all of a sudden big headphones now are the aspirational product because in a sense the sound is better. And what I'm a little gratified by, and I don't know if this is design, but it's sure as function, is that for like 15 years we went away from quality audio and now we're coming back to it because video has really improved. Selection, convenience, design has improved, but the quality of the audio actually went down dramatically with MP3 and now it's going up again, especially when you have the whole system and the video is really good and getting better. The audio has been bringing it down, and that's changing dramatically.
And I agree with that. I mean, as much as we're talking about, you know, interactivity at such a deep level over the last few days, I think there are certain kind of emotional connections to products that are kind of more traditional and more authentic. And I think this return to traditional audio and sound replication is one of those. I think the things Apple are doing with AirPlay and other wireless technologies are now starting to sort of once again reshape the face of audio from a consumer perspective. So I think that's a very cool thing.
Okay, I got another question for you that has come. Some people before the program asked me, robots.
Now robots are cool.
Now, Richard, you and Essential actually work with robots, right?
Yeah, because they're cool.
Well, tell us a little bit about that, and then Gary, I want to get your take on robotics.
We've been doing quite a lot of work in the robotic domain. In the consumer space, I don't know if those of you are familiar with iRobot and the Roomba. We've been working with those guys for a while. And that's actually been working with them now long enough to understand that how it seems to be this kind of natural uptake of acceptance of robots existing in people's lives. And I think beyond the sort of consumer space, I mean, actually a company like Robot are doing a number of really interesting things because in parallel to their efforts in the consumer space, they are actually also playing amazing role actually in on the sort of government side in creating these really impressive military robots. And I think then the most interesting domain is, again, building on this theme of interconnectedness, the next platforms that they're currently evolving, which we're working with them right now, is actually developing platforms that can serve in the sort of healthcare domain. Taking that, really getting to the point now where I think this level of really useful utility I think that we're really going to sort of see in robotics. And again, I think it's just a really cool area to sort of see that emerging and to see it being adapted to our lives in a way that is integrated and useful and not something that is kind of alien. But however, again, it's a really cool area that I think is going to emerge and become much more mainstream. And yeah, I mean, it's just cool stuff. You know, it's kind of the things you sort of think about as just being really cool.
Gary, what do you think about what's happening from your point of view from CEA with robotics and what's going on?
I'm actually from the future. I'm a Gary Shapiro robot. He's seeing the rest of South by Southwest right now.
Well, what are your other selves?
anyone who's consumed a lot of science fiction, as I have, and many of you have, I'm sure, is fascinated with the concept. It's obviously coming in so many different ways. And it started in a way maybe we didn't anticipate it. It really started pretty much with industrial robots, which have done some of the most repetitive tasks in a capital-intensive way and taken a lot of the human misery out of that type of factory work more and more, and it's increasingly so. But going down the line where we're going, I mean, it's robots have a tremendous number of applications. Obviously, with the Department of Defense, hazardous materials, they're working and they're out there. They're out there in bomb removal and things like that in Iraq and Afghanistan. But they're going also now into companion care. They're going into education. A robot is very patient. You know, the woman in my nav device who never judges me when I make a wrong turn, she's in a sense a robot who is very pleasant because she gets me where I'm going and she's fulfilling the mission. And it's working. So robots are out there. They're creeping upon us, but it's a kind of a market demand thing. Obviously, the iRobot is, I mean, I don't know how many millions have been sold. But,
yeah, millions.
But that is a very, who likes vacuuming? It sucks. I mean, you know, it's a really... So yeah. They're coming, and they'll be useful. It's just a question of the applications and the marketplace and the, you know, the price, the point between the price and the ability to produce them. And the ability to produce them is proceeding rapidly.
I want to ask one more question about design, and then I'm going to see people already lining up to ask some questions. So, Richard, you were asked by Gary's organization, CEA, to go over to their CEO forum this past summer and lead a panel of... really top consumer electronics executives talking about design. What can you tell us a little bit about who was there and what came out of that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I guess if I put it from my perspective, and you know, I guess what I was hoping to achieve by that was, in a way, to be a little bit of a design ambassador, I guess, in the sense of being able to be in an event where there was such an amazing array of senior executives and be able to communicate to them about the ongoing value of design. And in a way, it's changing role. And again, I think, as I said earlier, this changing role being one that it, as much as it has been valued about being something that, you know, has traditionally shaped the form of the artifacts and interactions that we that are part of our lives, the fact that design being this way of thinking, this way of thinking about systems, this way of thinking about how you can create some real value, you know, for business, and particularly in this kind of vast, kind of interconnected world that we're in now, there isn't any single product that is sort of or business solution or product solution that is solely driven by either a physical component of the product or a digital component. It's about how design can kind of combine those things. And I think Gary obviously referred to Apple, but I think this is an overall goal. I think, you know, as designers, we're seeking to build out sort of these ecosystems of really effective touch points. It's every touch point that people will integrate, you know, interface with a product or a service. And that is the sort of core role that design is playing today. And that was kind of part of the overall message that we're trying to get across to this cool group of guys that we ended up talking to when we were out in Italy. And we had Margaret Stewart from Google, who was there, who was kind of, you know, she was talking about just how it's almost like the glue of everything that's happening kind of out in the cloud. We had an individual from Philips Healthcare. We had an individual who was talking about connected home. And we had a guy, Bernard Blattel from BMW, who was also speaking to some of the changes that are going on in the automotive space. Interestingly enough, he was speaking much to the fact that, you know, BMW have launched a whole bunch of initiatives where they're investing in a whole areas of sort of like areas like ride sharing, and because they've recognize that people's perception of the automobile is changing over time. It isn't necessarily going to be ultimately devolved, or mobility isn't necessarily going to be valued purely based on kind of the status symbol. It's just, you know, it's going to be, you know, moving to other ways of being able to move from point A to B, and they're already investing in and have actually started to develop almost ride sharing and similar sort of business models to what Zipcar has already evolved over here to a high level.
Okay, Gary, I got a South by Southwest question for you. So you at the Consumer Electronics Association are doing more and more with innovation, with startups, with small groups. You've traditionally been connected to big, large organizations. At least that's how I think a lot of people see you. But now with the what advice do you have to give people who are here, who are young and hungry and want to really make a difference in the world, at the same time I'm sure would like to make a lot of money? Well, from your perspective, doing this for a little while, what's your advice for these guys?
Have a strategy. Fill a need. You know, when I first took the job, we had 60 companies, and they were all big ones, and I wouldn't take the job unless we were able to expand and go after smaller companies. Now, you know, with over 2,000 companies, 80% being small businesses, I think we've succeeded. And we'll, hopefully we'll continue to succeed. But we keep defining more broadly who we are and what innovation is. But an important thing happened a few years ago. Our leadership determined that our nation was in financial trouble. And when you're in this type of financial trouble, you have three choices. You could raise taxes, cut spending, or grow. Growth comes from innovation. So innovation is, in our view, absolutely critical to the future success of our country. And we define our brand, in a sense, as who we are as a nation, as we're a nation of innovators. Almost all of us came from immigrants, directly or indirectly, who came here for a better life. So it's almost genetic for us. And they were challenging the status quo. You know, we have a culture here of focusing on doing things better or different. We're not a consensus-based culture the way a lot of the Asian cultures are, for example. We have a First Amendment, which protects us from coming up with something new. So you could come up with a Google or a Facebook or a Twitter, and you could do it differently, and the government can't force you down because you're challenging someone else's business model. So we're always destroying someone else's business model. And we have kids that learn, you know, with lemonade stands. We're entrepreneurial. We reward success. We have a lot of millionaires and billionaires, which I think is a good thing. So if you add all that together, and plus we have phenomenal diversity. And diversity is our strength. There's no other country which is more heterogeneous than we are. And you put all that together, and you have a very creative culture. And we lead in every internet company as a U.S. company. Every one of them. They're just copycats around the world. And that applies also in other areas, such as medical and biomedical and in drugs and in Hollywood and in music. I mean, that's what I love about South by Southwest. It's capturing a lot of the innovation in America, which is so important to our future. So then the next question is what you can do about it generally as a country. And I can spend a lot of time talking about that, and I'll do it if you have any questions, or I'll do it afterwards, or you can read my book, or you can read any of my columns. But what do you do as an individual? You make a difference. You have a vision. You have a passion. You go after it. You ask questions. You learn. I mean, it is difficult sometimes to see a lot of startups and watch them making obvious mistakes, even just walking around the floor of the show here. I mean, I walked around so many companies, you don't even have a clue as to what they're doing, frankly, because it's not clear in their marketing and their vision. So it does require mentoring, and I think we try to, a lot of our senior executives offer to be mentors, and I think there's great room for that. And obviously requires capital. And one of the great things that's happened, I think, in this last week, actually, is the House of Representatives passed a bill overwhelmingly. It was only like 20 people who voted against it to change the laws dramatically so that anyone with less than $1 billion in revenue, which is everyone, can raise money without going through a lot of the paperwork and all the problems and the, you know, qualified investors and the Sarbanes-Oxley and all the things which dissuaded investment. So now we've had a dramatic bipartisan switch in just a few months. So if the Senate would act, and President Obama has indicated he will sign this, this Jobs Act will, I think, make a difference, and so people can gather money. Now, of course, along the way, there'll be a lot of littered bodies and a lot of people invested in things that maybe didn't take off. But ultimately, there will be winners from them. So it's obviously find your passion, get advice, seek money, and be clear on every step of the way that you have a goal there and go after it.
Okay, one last question, and then we're going to turn it over to the audience questions.
She's been so patient.
Cloud, but once, I know, but cloud computing. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Were the questions from Twitter, or where were those being fed? Just curious.
The questions were just in person.
Oh.
So listen, let's ask your question right now. I hate to make you stand there. Let's have your question right now.
Well, I apologize for being eager. It's just in the past sessions, it's been difficult to get questions in. So, I just had one.
Doesn't seem like that'll be a problem here.
That's just because people are drinking. It's not because of your session, I'm sure. They're all outside.
We're competing with happy hour.
Yes, you are. But I had one statement and then just a quick question. I work with Dell, Dell.com. And I was thinking about your driverless car, and I would just maybe challenge us all that concurrently we try to step up the robo, right? So if you could have robots to go, like we have car to go here, then you can have the kids getting driven home by the robots, right? So if they're driverless, but because I'm sure there's a physical behavior that you have a resonation with, right? So you feel more comfortable if there's someone present driving you than not having someone present to drive you. That's just my POV. Anyway, but my real question is, from a device standpoint and a hardware standpoint, being in the Austin market, we've been pretty innovative for years now. So I've been with Interactive since 94. And I was blessed enough to work with Scott Eckerd, who actually brought Motive Communications to the table in 2003 in tablet PCs, whereas iPad came up 7-8 years later. So my question is, what is the next device that you think we're going to be all sharing and jumping to the market? And granted, there's not a penetration yet of the tablet PC, so we have a huge trend that needs to happen there. But what do you think the device is in 20 years?
20 years?
No. 20 years.
I mean, I don't know about a 20-year answer, but I wonder. I mean, I was thinking about this, and again, another observation of what's going on. I mean, there was a... there must have been, like, thousands of tablets at CES, and there's thousands of smartphones. And I wonder really whether the next device is not necessarily device-driven, but it's more what's the most interesting kind of application or collecting of content, that can be basically delivered through basically whatever screen you want, wherever you want. So in one hand, it's maybe going to be less about, it's kind of like this ubiquity of screens, some of them that we may not exactly envision how they will be right now. But clearly, there's technology that, people like Google are working on to get, real-time, content, in glasses and that type of thing. So maybe bringing heads-up display technology into glasses is going to be one of the next cool devices that may appear.
For the midterm, one of the things to pay attention to is what the chip companies are saying and doing, especially when they're speaking publicly or if you have an opportunity to see what they're doing privately. So look at AMD, at Intel, at Qualcomm, at others, and pay attention. Because what we're seeing tremendous development, obviously there's Moore's Law, but there's also sensing devices, which I think are important. It used to be we were just, as kids, aware of temperature and barometric pressure, and then there are carbon monoxide detectors and others. But there's tremendous developments occurring in our ability to get input from the environment in thousands of different ways. And also, one of the great breakthroughs that I think Apple, in a sense, made it is they put inside the devices the ability for the device to sense the location. And you're also seeing with video game companies, obviously, that they're doing a lot more with, hands-free use and motion and location. Those are big developments. Another big development is obviously devices that learn about you and they respond accordingly to who you are, how you like to travel, how you learn, which is, education is such a fundamental problem in our society. But yet some kids are audio learners, some are video learners, some are live learners, some just want a great teacher. How do you capture the great teaching and put it in a way that the kid will respond and proceed at their own pace and get the knowledge they need? Not necessarily rote learning, but the American way, which I call it, of questioning and pushing back. So there's a lot out there coming. In 20 years, won't necessarily be the device. It'll obviously be all the different features and software and everything else in the device, which makes it interesting and compelling. And frankly, not really. The device won't be a big part of what's being paid attention to. That's why a lot of what we're seeing at CES, which you started out talking about, is a lot of applications out there. Applications today are limited by physical structures. Physical structures are changing dramatically. And that's what we're going light years ahead on.
I think your comment on sensing, and I think that's another, again, just building on that, the whole healthcare space in terms of developing cool applications that still require a physical component. So I think in terms of some of the next cool devices are going to be, as sensors can more accurately control the things that are going on in your body, is going to result in this kind of cool connectivity between a great sort of interactive experience with very sort of carefully and beautifully designed physical touch points that will start making those kind of critical sort of, healthcare ecosystems work really effectively.
Right. Once you get to healthcare, you start getting to individualized healthcare. Your own genetic structure, there's so much going on in obviously not only the mapping of the gene, but diseases and how they apply differently to your genes. So there's getting to healthcare by your genetics, which I think is going to be amazing.
Yeah, I think that's also important. As soon as you get into moving a little bit more from the consumer electronics space, but I think in this sort of blend of the creating social networks, applying them to disease management. You know, we've been doing some work kind of in that sort of almost on the extreme side with Genzyme, and they basically seek out drugs for very, very rare disease states. And we've been working with them to sort of help create basically a network of people who suffer from a very rare diseases around the world in very sort of separate locations, allow them to be able to connect kind of from, on a community level. But then that also provides a method for Genzyme to kind of create effective kind of collection and analytics of that data inside. So they, in a way, they're creating a community of a very, you know, a small sort of group of people with a rare disease, but that provides a means for them to more effectively dissect and analyze that data.
Okay, one more question from the audience.
So Jeff Bezos is famous for saying that devices are good. There's going to be a lot of single-purpose devices like the Kindle. I mean, he is selling a lot of times when he's saying that. But at this right now, I have like four devices on me, and if there's a health device coming, that's going to be another one. Do you see a divergence with like better and better SLR cameras that is just not going to be consolidated into a single iPhone type of thing, or do you see a convergence coming in?
I guess, I mean, it's probably going to go in both directions, because I think one of the things I was going to say in terms of the unique device, I think there are going to be unique application-specific physical products. And I mean, in many ways, from my perspective, that's a little bit about just trying to sort of simplify things. I want this one device to control this critical piece of information that is either important for me socially or important for me from a healthcare perspective or important for me otherwise. At the same time, as we're seeing right now, there's an awful lot of consolidation happening from an application perspective. So theoretically, everything could be consolidated through one device, as it is right now. iPads, iPhones, other smartphones are basically being used in every domain. It's not just a consumer application of those physical devices anymore. They're being used in the healthcare environment. They're being used in rugged commercial environments. So in many ways, there will be some consolidation, I think as well. But I think there's always going to be a place for the sort of the unique, simplified physical product.
It's a really great question. And 10 years ago, had you asked me, I would have scoffed and said, you know, everyone talks about multifunction devices, and the only multifunction device in history which has ever succeeded is the Swiss Army knife. And I said, yeah, you could talk about clock radios and TV VCRs or, other combinations. I always personally was, and still am, pushing, if anyone wants a bad idea, is a refrigerator TV. I mean, that's a great multifunction device. It hasn't happened yet, though. But what happened, and clearly, let's take today. So today, the single-lens reflex market for cameras is a little challenged, honestly, because increasingly people are using their smartphones to take pictures, and they don't want to carry around multiple products. But yet, there's some great cameras which are having great sales because they're still a step ahead. And if you really want a good camera, you don't want the delay from your smartphone and all the other challenges, you'll go get that camera. So there is multiple device frustration. I realize I brought four devices out here as well myself, but I love every one of them, and they're great. And I don't know if you could get a great device that does everything. But that's just a marketplace decision. We'll see how it evolves, because people are, the best device is always not going to be part of the best device is not going to be part of that multifunction device. Let's be honest.
So maybe like a quick follow-up, and I realize I sort of put you on the spot. What's your take on the new Sony game device that's just coming out and just out there?
Oh, it's fabulous.
It's because you see that and you look at an iPad and all the games that people, casual games that people are playing, and like, what were they thinking? But then you play with it, it's kind of cool. So
I had a quick demo. I was with the president of Sony a few weeks ago, and he showed it to me. I thought it was pretty cool, but I'm not the best market research sample, to be honest with you.
Go ahead.
I was kind of curious to hear you, hoping you could talk a little more about the meeting that you set up or whatever to talk to the CEOs or senior executives about design's role at more senior levels of corporations. Curious to hear what you talked about. More curious to hear their reaction to that. And I'm also wondering, do you see the future of that being more about you know, like a chief design officer type of role, or is it about integrating design thinking across the board?
Well, obviously, I think I don't know where I'm going to start with the question, but obviously, integrating, promoting more the thinking behind design, I think is actually the sort of evangelist kind of role that any designer, I think, should be promoting for what we do, for our profession. In terms of the sort of chief design officer, yeah, I think there's always been a push to be able to make sure that there is design leadership at the C level in any organization. And I mean, you really just have to look out there. It's very obvious when you look at companies that are building these sort of rich ecosystems that are designing every touch point around their brand. And typically in those cases, they have got very strong design leadership and have a very strong connection with at the C level. And quite often, most of those organizations still do actually require enlightened leadership. And that isn't always going to happen. There's only one Apple, and it's very difficult to recreate that in an organization who is not culturally ready or set to do that. And genuinely, it takes an awful lot of time to build that effort. And I think, at the end of the day, I guess as a design profession, we just have to be very sort of solid not to undersell ourselves and be confident about promoting the sort of value of design up and through the organization to the highest levels.
Gary, are you ready to hire a chief design officer for CEO?
A CDO?
A CDO.
We don't design products, but, we are focused in design in ways that people wouldn't anticipate. For example, there's a new law which requires that disabled people benefit from all new products and that their needs be considered before any product can be sold today. Most people don't know about that law, but it is in terms of products that connect with the internet. So all of a sudden, design becomes a very, very big issue because there's like a zillion different types of disabilities, and it's very difficult to design to all of them. So that becomes a very, very big issue. So we've gotten involved more in design than we want. What we often tell the government is, please don't tell us how to design products. Tell us the result you want, and we'll work towards the result, but don't specify the design. They've tried that in a whole range of ways. Right now, just to shift subjects dramatically, there's a the head of the National Transportation Safety Board said that she wants to see in every car products designed so they cannot be usable by a driver, any product. And that's a scary thing for us. How do you design a... And she said, oh, there'll be a field of strength which comes out and turns all your products off, and they have to be designed to be responsive to that field from the driver. And we would rather say, well, let's design products so that you stay or alert in a car, which makes more sense to us. But these are, when you're dealing with people's human lives or disabilities or some very important societal interests, there's always a balance test. And everyone in design or engineering will tell you everything's a matter of trade-offs. That's all that ever occurs is trade-offs in design. It's one thing to have something stylistically, that is aesthetically appealing, but when you're talking about mandating features in products, for example, let me give you something that's really stupid and basic, and I'll never forget sitting across from Vice President Al Gore in his office when he was vice president, and he was drinking Perrier, which bothered the heck out of me, and I didn't understand it. But he was saying that we have to put a V-chip in every TV set. I'm saying, look, we came up with the concept of a V-chip. We invented it, and if it's a feature, it'll be advertised and it'll be great. He says, no, it must be mandated. And we lost that one, and the V-chip has been ever since a disaster because it's like no one ever talks about it or advertises it, and it was a mandate from government. But on a voluntary basis, it would have been a pretty cool thing.
Richard, I don't think you answered the last question about giving him a quick insight into what came out of that panel at the CEA summit.
I think as I maybe talked about earlier, I think one of the things there was just to provide this, I guess, a level of enlightenment, I guess, or not really enlightenment, but just kind of reconfirming this commitment to what design can actually do now, and communicating that the role of designers has already transformed.
I would tell you what happened but I was there, but let me share something with you all. I had just found out my wife was pregnant while I was in Italy, and I don't remember a thing that occurred there except that.
Okay, well, good. Now, does anyone, do we have another question from the audience? Well, I have a question. Cloud computing. Gary, cloud computing. Consumer electronics. What's it mean? Is it really a cloud?
You know, I know it's very fashionable to talk about cloud computing, but it's really kind of an old take on what's been out there for a while, and it's a new flash in there. Cloud computing is exceptional, and it does allow you to move a lot. It affects a lot of different things. For example, it affects people who design and sell or rent buildings because you don't need that super air-conditioned space anymore for your servers. So you could basically export that, and the question is how far you can export it. Obviously, there are tremendous concerns for a whole variety of reasons, whether it's security or safety or putting all your eggs in the basket with these recent destructions of websites because of piracy by our federal government. They took out a lot of legitimate stuff that was on websites that you don't have access to. So there is a legitimate concern in giving up the physical ownership and putting all your eggs on a cloud. So there's benefits and there's risks. I'm a person that always believes in dual source of everything. Whether it's, you know, you don't buy all your products from China, you don't do anything, you don't put all your stuff on the cloud, you keep a copy somewhere else. Yeah, it's just a matter of management.
And that's also kind of like a little sort of always a funny twist on the cloud. I think the sort of buzz about the cloud is it's just like this magical space where everything is a lot of happening up there in the cloud. You know, the reality is it's really one of the most sort of physically demanding spaces. I mean, and, you know, fortunately, I mean, obviously, you know, we're in Austin, so Dell's right here. You know, but the sort of growth in physical devices that are actually managing the cloud and how you make those vast environments energy efficient and practical. I mean, this, you know, the cloud is actually driven by extremely intensively physical hardware.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, you know, we are going to cloud computing, clearly. The United States, you would think, would have a strategy favoring cloud computing, but we have a lot of things against us. We have a relatively high cost of energy, and they suck up a lot of energy. We have other rules and requirements. We have some of the intellectual property piracy laws, which we fought with SOPA and PIPA. Really, there's laws on the books, actually, which allow tremendous destruction. So I learned today in talking about this that Iceland, for example, now has a very favorable national strategy, and they're going to become the cloud computing hub. They have extraordinarily cheap energy and a legal structure which protects products in the cloud. So Iceland, with 300,000 people, is like may beat the United States in cloud computing in terms of physical infrastructure.
Well, we're going to run out of time. I think we'll have time for two more questions, so let's go ahead with two more from the audience.
Thank you. I was wondering if you, gentlemen, you know, a lot of talk has been made about the coming death of the PC, what, if and when, and I wonder if you, gentlemen, could just discuss that, what your thoughts are, if it is coming, what the implications are for the people that make their living based on around the PC, whether it's Dell or HP or the corporate IT staff, and what other alternatives are there, and just what the trend is here.
The way you asked the question, you agreed with the premise, which is the coming death of PC, meaning that you think it's going away. I don't know if that's the case. I find myself toggling between, you know, a tablet, a netbook, and a PC all the time, depending on where I am. And physically, I find using a PC personally more comfortable if I'm in a PC environment and with a desk and a chair. But if I'm not, you know, a tablet or even a handheld is fine. So when people say the death of something, it's usually being replaced upon a superior medium. The fact that I don't think there's, other than convenience, I don't think something superior to a PC, and I'll include Apple desktops in a PC definition as opposed to just a Windows environment. So I don't think the PC is dead, or in the short term is even dead. Sales may diminish and there's some substitutive effect, but I think there's a huge reason to still have a PC.
I mean, I think basically the personal computing, it's just evolving. I mean, I think sometimes you get stuck with the sort of physical mental model of what a personal computing is. I mean, basically it has already evolved, I guess is my answer to that.
Okay, let's have our last question for the day.
Hi, my name is Mandy. I actually work for Sharp Electronics. And you guys mentioned previously that 4K is one of the next big trends as far as TV goes, and I agree. But I'm curious to hear what you guys feel will be some other big trends in the future as far as TV goes and as far as what consumers are looking for.
You know, I checked into my hotel room last night of a 5-star hotel, which I will not name, and I was shocked when I got into my room and there was a cathode ray tube television with a remote control. The numbers were... So, I mean, the fact is you could buy a phenomenal flat-screen TV now for a few hundred dollars. It's the best buy there is in history. So how do you get better than that? Well, you know, the joke in our building is always about smell-o-vision. I don't think that's going to work. There's some great work in combining TV and the sound and vibrations and other effects. But I really, and I've actually talked about this for 20 years, and I call it wall TV. So if I was in the painting industry, indoor painting or wallpaper, I'd be a little concerned because I think the vision of the future that I like to picture is you have 6 walls, the 4 and the ceiling and the floor. And there's no reason that they cannot be displays that provide a purpose or respond to you or provide entertainment or provide a video game or interactive live experience with other people that is phenomenal. I mean, the opportunities in the visual display world are absolutely huge. And you know, I have probably 6 Sharp TVs in my house, including one in a laundry room and one in a bathroom. I mean, the little displays that are just phenomenal. Then again, I'm really biased because I think these things are great. So you combine that with a learning television and computer and interoperability. I mean, you have a real opportunity there. And it's just a matter, the cost has gone down so dramatically that all this is foreseeable and possible. The question is whether there'll be market demand for it. The challenge that I see the TV makers is they have overcapacity and they have all assumed that no one else is going to build capacity. And so right now the supply is way ahead of the worldwide demand, which is unfortunate.
Richard, what's your take on that?
I mean, I think a lot of it's going to get down to sort of demand for content. And again, whether it's, you know, again, it's kind of the mental model of saying, is it a TV? Is it a smartphone? Is it a tablet? I think basically your content's going to go with you wherever you are. And so I think that kind of model of thinking about these traditional ways of viewing your content in one place has already transformed and will continue to sort of diverge.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you each a chance to give us a 140-character tweet wrap-up. Richard, I'll let you go first. The future...
This is the future. The future will be that the Consumer Electronics Association will rename the CES, the Consumer Experience Show.
Whoa. Okay,
really
you heard it here first. Consumer Electronics Show going to become Consumer Experience Show.
You know, it's interesting, about 20 years ago, Akio Morita spoke and said this should be called the Consumer Entertainment Show, which is kind of interesting. So my tweet is that, you know, innovation is our DNA as a nation, and we must focus upon it as a national strategy.
Okay, well, thank you all for coming today, and we'll...